up front, no relevant financial relationships. Also up front, a number of you, due to the vagaries of the scheduling of APHA, may have seen a version of this presentation in the last session. So feel free to leave, feel free to stay, feel free to interject, improve upon my delivery of the presentation. And I will assume this is a conversation. So anyone that looks like they're confused, I might call upon and ask them what is the basis of their confusion. We also have the executive director of the North Carolina Biopreparedness Project sitting in the audience, David Potenziani, who undoubtedly, without question,
is confused.
Will add to our confusion. No, he'll be here to add to the elucidation of what we're going to talk about this morning. Also, encourage you to continue eating. I'm not between you and lunch. If you've got food, eat it. If you want to share it, share it. That'll actually be part of our ability to monitor the biosphere, because at least we might get an outbreak if any of the food we've got isn't as well prepared as it ought to be. So seriously, please do interrupt me and ask questions as we go along, particularly those of you that are already briefed in. So my role as a consultant to this project is to take some of the realms that may not be as traditional as public health is represented in this room and bring them into a larger surveillance system. Why, and now I'm into the questions, why would anyone assume that the National Sheriff's Association has a public health advisor? Any particular issues that you think we might focus? Epidemics, yep. Yep. I mean, we have 17% African-American males with HIV status between 18 and 24 are here in the District of Columbia. You know, that's a number proportionate to many of the countries in West Africa. And those are, there's significant evidence that that is a result of the movement of those young men in and out of incarcerated populations. And that plays on into other parts of the population. I also just share with you, and really do want you to walk away with this statistic and understand the benefit of working with sheriffs and law enforcement. You are three times more likely to encounter somebody from a sheriff's office than a mental health office if you have some sort of mental health issue in this nation. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Think about the role that our jailers, and that isn't what sheriffs are doing, but that is a function that we have in respect to the lives of people with mental health challenges, that may be away from your medicines, you may not appreciate your freedom being taken away, none of us would, and now in that situation you have professionals, but not necessarily mental health prepared professionals, being part of your encounter with the government system. So if nothing else, please remember that, and please remember how, you know, in all of your work, you might be able to help us work on that. That's one of my roles, but I want to move further on into NCB Prepared, and again, hope that we can have a conversation about this, having already presented much of this material already. The Department of Homeland Security in 2004 looked at the ability of the nation to understand the threats from the biosphere. That's a term, I think, of art that David has helped us focus on. But you can think of it as the biological ecosystem in which we all live and breathe. An ecosystem that in 2001, there was a deliberate introduction into some of the most crucial parts of our government of anthrax. So from 2004 onwards, the Department of Homeland Defense has had a national effort to try and capture, through something called the National Biosurveillance Information System, a picture that would provide early warning on the deliberate introduction of disease. many of you will understand immediately, without a baseline of what is the background level of disease, the deliberate introduction isn't going to be something we can find. So the expansiveness of our effort is to go further into areas of the environment and to the beyond that into augmenting relationships with other systems. These are our goals. We are spending the majority of our time on that early detection. That might be more a result of the fact that we're 1 year into a three-year definition of how a system coming from a public health perspective can augment the national system being developed through the Department of Homeland Security. The assumptions here are that the earlier the intervention, the more likely it is that we would have the opportunity to provide both better decisions against what we're experiencing, but also perhaps mitigate this. These are some of the resources and ways that we're beginning to study this phenomenon. And again, these are also just early stage areas, but not necessarily the traditional surveillance systems that Eric has shared with us that are wholly within the domain of public health and are within the state, local, federal system. So, State of North Carolina has a 10-year history within the department that David works in of being able to bring together a national level emergency medical services data. In fact, has done some of the data definition along the lines of the work that Eric described in that area, such that now 46 states have a similar system, and that's something we're looking forward to tapping into. Carolina's Poison Center and emergency department visits, you can imagine those are some of the early human manifestations of the syndromes that we're looking for. And then further on into other parts of the biosphere, particularly want to point to weather data. To the extent that there are patterns and other drivers of systematic ways to understand differences between environmentally caused disease, that weather data and the use of it. Yes, please, ma'am. Restaurant inspections data gives us a baseline, gives us the opportunity to notice within the active monitoring within North Carolina, but it also gives us, interestingly, one of the things that perhaps we don't do quite so well, which is understanding where certain facilities are. So in that it's a regulated industry to the extent that you have to have that license in order to serve food for the public, we can also use that as a basis for doing some investigation. David, any other thoughts on how to add to that? Please. Food is, you know, the classic government system that has the largest diversity of agencies involved across the most number of jurisdictions. With all, I mean, every time there's a public policy announcement about the confusion of government, food is up there amongst those the descriptive, which is why we're asserting a system that tries to be agnostic about the location of data, but to bring it together in a way that allows us to describe that picture. I will not even attempt to try and describe the technical details of that. You've seen the enemy, and it's right there. He'll provide all of that information for you. Quick, I'm not going to. I think this slide has been up long enough to let you see the diversity of the areas that we're looking to do some early stage analysis on, and we'll go into some of those tools. But everything from newly emerging drugs, such as bath salts, I don't know if those are in the communities you live in and you understand what that is, which was something discovered through text analysis in the poison control centers, in poison control centers whose operators did not know that phrase. So to the extent that it became something that kept on being triggered, it allowed them to begin to understand that there was a different set of behaviors in the communities that they were serving. Of course, influenza-like illness syndrome of obvious and apparent interest to public health ongoing. And if we have time, we can go into a little bit more detail about how we're approaching those. And again, I will plead with David to help explain some of that in a different way. So here we go. Here are the levels and the approach that we're taking. Just to point out, in each instance, we're trying to stay within that realm of open source and commercially appropriate and commercially industrial strength systems. The funding for this program was an earmark that went to a group that formed up in North Carolina, but the expectation is this will be a national program within the next 2 years, having the largest privately held software company in the United States. We make that claim not in the world, because who knows what the ownership patterns are of software companies in China. But having SaaS, a tool that I'm sure everyone in this room opens up every day with their breakfast, having them as a member of the team is just an incredible strength, as some of the other national partnerships that are already there. Again, please stop me if there are things you would like us to drill into with more detail. Again, pointing to this model, which I think is at the core of what we're trying to do between early detection and ongoing situational analysis, these are the levels of analysis that SAS uses when it looks at markets. Now, SAS's history is in providing analytic tools across industries that allow them to better understand what their performance characteristics are. So that's healthcare, financial systems, supply chain management. And our sense is there's nothing qualitatively different about our work that suggests we cannot use this same set of concepts. And they've been helping us understand through sharing some of their analytic expertise how we drive this. Of course, ultimately, we want to be at the top right, even as the standard reports, the ad hoc reports, just to make sure that the cases of measles, heaven forbid, but the amount of seasonal flu is on a pathway that we understand. We're still trying to move up to the the top level there with some predictive modeling, and we're using the expertise of people who have done this to in the derivatives industry on Wall Street, and now applying it against public health data. And doing that in an agnostic way, which is actually a very interesting exercise, to the extent that these analysts are not held back by the presumption of what they expect to see, it allows them to see new relationships and, in fact, develop some new tools. Sometimes at odds with classic epidemiology, to the extent that the retrospective certainty that many of I'm not trying to be provocative about your profession or any other epidemiologist here, but that the certainty as opposed to the predictive interests of somebody who's trading against future forecasting has been an interesting cultural issue for us. I'm sure I was going forward, so if this I'm going backwards with the forward button. Interesting. All right, now I'm going forward, so I just need to optimize my own sense of how computers work. Perhaps it always worked that way, and I just didn't understand. Again, this difference, and the difference that comes out of data issues depending upon the location is part of the assessment that we're making. That vital statistics tends to be on the far right in terms of the specificity, whereas many of the data's sets that we see deriving some of the highest value are those things less structured and perhaps preclinical. And in being preclinical gives us the opportunity to move at a different pace and without some of the issues of privacy, particularly because, again, we're trying to represent this as a social rather than a individual intervention. Some nods still. I think we've still got some engagement here. Of course, we have to acknowledge that this is not a simple direct ask for data. There are numerous traps along the way. David's familiarity with this slide may be, if anyone really wants to engage with what we're describing here, we're talking about the ways that we as an organization can approach other organizations, presumably some of yours at some point when we get further success. So I'm at that point in my presentation when I can wind up and we can just have conversation and questions based upon Eric prompting me that we're close to the end of my time. But David, do you want to spend a minute just saying something about that slide?
One of the challenges that everybody in the public health and related fields has is getting access to the data. So how do you convince people who have the data that are generating it for their own reasons, whether they're providing clinical care to individuals, whether they're running a business? In a way, it doesn't matter. They all have an issue of why should you have access to my data? And so part of what we try to do is listen to what their values are, what's their value proposition about their data, and is there something we can do to provide them an incentive to share it with us? Because we're all about uses of data that was never intended. No one ever creates a data set really with thinking, we're going to look for that terrorist attack. They're doing it for clinical delivery. They're doing it because they're trying to get their products out to market as fast as they can. They're doing it for all sorts of other reasons. We have to be cognizant of that, factor it into our business model, so that we find, once we do that, we understand the value proposition that is workable. It unlocks the data. It breaks the code that has prevented a lot of agencies and entities from getting access to these data in a timely fashion, because time is the enemy. If you want to have early detection, you've got to get the data as soon as possible. A week later is just not going to help. If it's already data from the autopsy table, you can't help that person anymore.
Any thoughts about that? Any success stories to share? People have found ways to engage in that process?
Well, I mean, I just know from working with some other agencies for data collection, I think one of the biggest concerns always is around confidentiality and privacy. So if there are some ways to communicate how the information will be de-identified or confidential, how it will be stored in a confidential way, I know that that helps a lot in terms of being able to get access to data.
I think my sense is that we have done that, and that is the, you know, as you point out, it's the first question, but then there are levels at which that can just keep coming back. So even if you present your confidentiality plan, is it persuasive? I mean, that I'd be interested to hear if other people have ways of persuading through that sort of technical response. There's a comment here, but I'd also like to hear Eric's thought on that, because you really are living with sensitive issues. But if we can just hear from back there, and then we'll ask you, Eric. I thought the lady behind... No? Oh, I'm sorry. Then you're on the spot. It's you.
I'm on the spot.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, we certainly deal with some patient-specific data, and you know, there are a lot of privacy issues or privacy concerns. You know, from a programmatic standpoint, you know, I don't understand necessarily the technical aspects of it, but right now we are collecting on the national level aggregate data, which is, you know, obviously doesn't contain a lot of that, but we're working to collect some patient-specific or individual-level-specific data, and are working on methods to de-identify it as it comes from the states. The state EDI programs deal with that as they collect data from the hospitals and from the audiologists. It has to be de-identified, but there has to be a way to link up and connect so that you don't get duplicate records. You have to collect multiple sources of de-identified data. And you have to assure the public that you are protecting their data. Of course, the HIPAA rules allow public health to collect patient-level data and exchange it with other health providers, so that, you know, there's not an issue but you do have to be careful. I don't have any specific examples of how, but it is an issue that states deal with.
Yeah. Please. Great question. We retain no data on systems owned by the School of Medicine at the University of North Carolina, in that it's always a call out to other people's data. That said, those access rights have to be described in those data use agreements. I don't know, David, I mean, you think at this stage, do we say it's open until... it needs to be closed, or until it's no longer useful, or nobody's deriving value from it?
It's in part an evolving answer. Certainly, when we are fully operational sometime in the next 12 months, we will be dynamically sampling data using that IRODS layer that Tim flashed up there. The idea is data is usually best in its own system. Data improves over time. And so why take on the burden of creating a complementary data warehouse, because you take on all of those custodial issues? Rather, by dynamically sampling or accessing the data, you get whatever it is, the best it's going to be from its home system. Now, there are steps you can take to address data quality issues and so forth on the fly as you're incorporating it to do the analytics. Our hope is we're going to get data as soon as it's generated. Currently, sometimes it takes more than 24 hours for data to be made available to us. But in some cases, we get it within 2 hours. Again, timeliness of the data has vexed everybody who's trying to do this kind of work in being able to understand the rapidly currently, we have essentially the system inside a walled garden. Almost nobody gets in there. And the products that are brought out of it are information. We don't provide access to data. We don't never intend to provide access to data. Rather, we want to derive information based on the analytical models that we develop to produce that and provide it to the people that we think will find this of use in the public health community, emergency medical services, and so on. So the notion is we're looking at a preponderance of evidence. We're not looking for an index case. We're not looking for patient zero. We're not interested in an individual. Because by the time you get to that point clinically, you're past where we think is our domain of action. We're looking for phenomena that appear across populations in de-identified data that allow us to look at it in terms of the analytical models that when certain indicators move above 1, 2, or 3 standard deviations, we say this is an issue of interest. And that's about as far as we take it. The idea is to initiate investigations in other domains by other people using other systems that are more traditionally public health. We're like the canary in the mine.
I'm going to cut you off because I think we've run over our time. You've run over.
Well,
not me. You have. Thank you very much. David is DDP, P as in Paul, at unc.edu. And as certainly a valuable contact of mine up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.